With a new legislative session underway in Albany, we're checking in with state lawmakers and interest groups about their priorities for 2021. On today's show, we're joined by Mario Salento, president of the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions representing 2.5 million members, retirees, and their families, which has an influential voice at the state capitol and is an underwriter of this program. Welcome back to the show, Mario.
David, thank you so very much for having me.
So I want to start with some of the COVID-19-related priorities, and the first one listed on your legislative agenda has to do with the passage of the so-called New York HERO Act, which has to do with workplace safety during the pandemic. Can you describe that piece of legislation and why it's a priority for your organization?
Sure. That's a great way to start this, really. Right now, David, there are no statutory protocols for private sector workers in terms of how to respond to infectious diseases. Keep in mind, before COVID, we had to deal with Ebola and the avian flu and SARS. So our priority is to put in place protections for workmen and women who even now, 10 months into the pandemic, still have no statutory protocols in place to protect them. Keep in mind, very similar legislation was passed and signed into law for public sector workers a few months ago. At this point, what the Act would do, it would establish minimum standards for COVID-related workplace safety protocols statewide. So not only for COVID, but for any future communicable diseases. So it would establish protocols on appropriate use of, and levels of, of personal protective equipment and employee testing, staffing policies, social distancing practices, cleaning and disinfecting of other measures, right? What you want to do, David, is you want to increase safety and decrease exposure. And what the bill would do, it would create, in addition, several enforcement mechanisms and establish workplace committees. So you'd be providing, worker training and input as to the worksite implementation. Basically, it's so that everyone has a voice, right? It's about safety for workers. It's about safety for the employers also. Certainly, first and foremost, it's a worker safety issue because that's the point of action. But the reality is employers are also part of the worksite. They go onto the work floor. If it's a store, they're right there every single day. So it's safety measures for them as well. And for the customers they come into contact with every single day. So you keep that in mind. The workers, they're there every day. First and foremost, they're a priority. The employers have a stake in it as well. The customers that come into those shops have a stake in it. Then keep in mind, those workers, they go home at night. If we don't keep them safe in the workplace, they bring these diseases back home. So now you have an aunt, an uncle, you have an elderly parent who hasn't been to work in 20 years, gets the virus, and you know where that leads. So it's not only about these workers. Obviously, they're the main concern. It's about protecting 19 million New Yorkers from this day forward. And now, David, I'll say this. Shame on us if we haven't learned anything from the past 10 months. This is a template, what we're talking about here, a template for saving lives now and in the future. Because we've said this many times, COVID, as I've laid out, is not the first disease we've had to deal with. It's certainly the strongest and the most dangerous. And we don't know what's going to come down the line. We really have an opportunity here to get something done, and we have an opportunity to protect ourselves now and into the future.
Conversely, then, what do you think about efforts legislatively to limit the liability of employers when it comes to the risks of COVID-19 exposure for employees and potential customers?
Now, employers have a responsibility, first and foremost, to protect the men and women who work for them. They also have a responsibility to the customers who come into their places of business. So to ask for an outright liability exemption on workplace protection is wrong, and it's somewhat inhumane.
Organized labor has repeatedly lobbied in the past for independent contractors, many of whom work in the so-called gig economy for third-party online apps like Uber or DoorDash, to get the same labor protections as New Yorkers categorized as employees. I assume you're making the same push in 2021. And what would you like to see in terms of the protections for these workers?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, David, because I do feel that this pandemic has really shown everyone how important gig workers or app-based workers are to our overall economy and more importantly, our overall way of life as a society. What we want to be able to see is that gig workers or app-based workers receive the same rights and protections as all other employees in the state of New York. That includes, David, minimum wage and overtime and workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, harassment protection, the right to organize. Because, again, these workers are doing the same exact work. But if you work at a traditional business, you're receiving all of those rights and protections. But if you're a gig worker or an app-based worker and you get your work off of an app on a phone, they don't receive any of those protections. It's ludicrous. It's outrageous. It's unfair. It's nonsensical. And the fact that we have workers who in this day and age are still treated as less than, it's unacceptable. Look, these workers throughout the pandemic, right, they have been taking food, all of us who can't or won't leave their houses. They've been taking people to the doctor, taking people to the pharmacy. They've even taken people to work so that other people can go and earn a living. So I think we're at a point now where, you know, we've made progress over the last few years. It's been more of the public discourse. The legislature really understands where we are. The governor has said several times in his State of the State messages the last few years that he certainly understands the predicament of these workers. But I think the general public really has a greater understanding now of the role that these workers play in our society and have truly come to understand that they're being treated as less than and unequal to all other workers. So we have to make sure that they're at the very least treated as everyone else and only just asking for receiving the same rights and protections as everyone else who goes to work every day.
The governor's approach to this issue last year was to propose a task force while state lawmakers have introduced legislation. Do you think this is something where we need additional study, say, with a task force, or is the sort of framework already known and therefore should just be adopted via legislation?
Yeah, I think we're at a point now where everyone understands what the issue is. Everyone has had certainly about two and a half years to really understand what's going on and actually, as again, during the pandemic, practically see for themselves what these workers are going through. So I think we're at a point now where we're getting something done legislatively and definitively. The time has come.
We're discussing the 2021 legislative priorities of the New York AFL-CIO, and our guest is the organization's president, Mario Salento. You also want to see the legislature and governor adopt new or higher taxes aimed at wealthy New Yorkers to help address the state's budget deficit and fund additional government services. What's the best way to increase funding for the state's coffers?
A couple of ways, David. I'm glad you asked. Look, I think we have to take a comprehensive view how to solve this problem, meaning we can't cut our way out of this deficit, right? So we have to look at all revenue-generating options. And the reason for that is we need to preserve the vital services that we all rely on, right? And we need to protect the jobs that provide them. So if we don't raise a significant amount of revenue, we're going to have to dig ourselves out of a deeper hole economically and socially, right? So first, economically, you'll see even greater job loss because we won't have the funding to maintain services and the jobs that go with them, right? So in that case, you lose jobs, you lose even more income tax revenue. Now you have more people on unemployment, meaning they can only purchase, at best, the essentials. So now you've hurt the small businesses across the state because they have fewer customers. And as a result of that, you lose tax revenue from those businesses. Then those businesses shut down, and now they lay off additional workers, exacerbating the situation, and you start the cycle all over again. So then you get to the social impact, right? Because now you're losing those services, which means cuts in education and health care and transportation, sanitation, law enforcement, firefighters, so on and so forth. So now you've reduced the quality of our standard of living and life as a whole. So what we're saying is this, that the wealthiest individuals in New York have to pay a little bit more toward their fair share of it. So we support new tax brackets, right? And it's important to keep in mind that we're talking about tax brackets that get us to a point. I think the levels are we're talking about for millionaires and ultra millionaires, right? So we're talking about $5 million level, a $10 million level, $100 million, $1 billion in earnings, right? Combined, those proposals could raise us up to $10 billion in state revenue. That's yearly. That's annually, David. We also talk about stock transfer tax. which is imposed, as you know, on the sale of stocks and related products, that's been rebated back for decades. That could generate $13 billion a year, right? So now we're up to $23 billion. But we're also saying, and we said this, take a comprehensive approach, take a look at everything. The governor has talked about, and there's been support in both houses for legalizing and regulating adult-use cannabis. The estimates there have been, I think it's $300 million in new tax revenue eventually, annually. And I think what's most important about that, David, even more than the tax revenue initially, which we need, is the possibility of creating 30,000 new jobs, which brings these men and women into the economy and the tax revenue that they bring in terms of income tax, so on and so forth. We're also saying to look at legalized gaming, and I know the governor's talked about that, and both houses have been talking about that. So you take a look at a comprehensive approach, and we say, yes, we're going to have to raise taxes. We're going to start new industries. We're going to put more people to work. There are ways to get and cover these deficits, in addition to what we hopefully will get from Washington. If we do this correctly, we can save the services that we all rely on, and we can save the jobs and even create jobs for more New Yorkers moving forward.
One of the priorities outlined in your agenda is defined as, quote, universal health insurance coverage in New York State. There's a bill floating around the Capitol for years now called the New York Health Act, which would create a state-run system of health insurance. Is that legislation the right way to achieve your goal of universal health insurance coverage?
I think, David, conceptually, we support that. We want everyone to have health care, that we want everyone to be able to access health care. I think there are going to be discussions ongoing now. I obviously, with the budget deficit that we're facing, I don't know where it's going to be on the legislature's list of priorities. But for the labor movement as a whole, we'd like to get to a place where everyone will have health care and have access to it.
What changes would you want to see to the Health Act in order to get the AFL-CIO on board?
I don't know if I'd get into too many specifics right now. I think we have a long way to go on it. But we've been in there. We've talked about this for many sessions for many years now. And I think, again, it's one of those issues where we've made incremental progress in making people aware of the fact that this is something that has to be addressed. And again, as a labor movement, we've always talked about being inclusive. So, you know, we're inclusive internally within the labor movement where all are welcome. We welcome ideas and thoughts and processes. And I feel the same way about this issue. We have to get everyone together and figure out a way that is feasible, that makes sense, to get us to where I think it's really everyone's goal, right? I don't think anyone necessarily doesn't want someone else to have health care or want everyone to have health care. It's the best way to do it, and we're still working on that.
On New Year's Eve, the Farm Laborers Wage Board opted not to set the state down a path for lowering the overtime threshold for farm workers, which is currently at 60 hours a week, and there had been a push to get it down to 40 hours. Do you want to see lawmakers revisit this issue in 2021 and create some sort of mechanism to potentially bring down the overtime threshold or create just a lower threshold through statute?
I'd be in favor of that. I'll tell you this. It is an absolute disgrace what just happened. And the fact that we're going to put this off for another year is, as I said, it's disgraceful. You know, they talked about the reason being the pandemic. Well, the wage board was put together at the beginning of the pandemic. They went through 10 months of the pandemic, meeting and talking. So to say that the pandemic is the reason for putting this off, again, is nonsensical. We were in the midst of the pandemic. There weren't any surprises there. And we're at a point now where you've raised the expectations of these workers. And the most galling aspect of this whole thing and what's transpired, David, is this, is that the farm workers are the first step of the food supply chain in this state and in this country. They're the first step. You have, after they pick the food, you have the men and women who transport the food to warehouses. You have the people who work in the warehouses. You then have those who deliver the food to all of the supermarkets and all of the food outlets. You then have those who stock the shelves. You then have those men and women who check you out at the counter and bag your groceries. Every single one of those men and women, those workers, have a 40-hour overtime threshold. Why and how can anyone justify the most important and vital members of that process, the first success of that process, those workers don't have the same rights and protection of a 40-hour threshold. It's insulting to anyone's intelligence to think that the pandemic should have delayed this. And it's a shame. And they raise the expectations, the hopes of men and women who've been through enough. They've been tortured. They've been, metaphorically speaking, they've been disadvantaged for so long. And this is just another example of not enough people really concerned about the plight of these men and women. And look, we're going to fight to make sure it gets to 40. If we have to do it legislatively, we'll do it legislatively. The board is supposed to come back before the end of the year and address this. And I can guarantee you, if we get to that point, we get back and nothing's done by then, we will hold everybody accountable.
And finally, the Democrats in Albany, who you're politically aligned with, now have supermajorities in both houses of the state legislature, which could theoretically give them extra muscle in their work with the governor. How do you want to see them flex, I guess, these muscles in 2021?
I don't think they necessarily have to flex their muscles. I wouldn't expect the governor to oppose any pro-worker legislation. So I don't know if that's necessarily an issue. It's really an internal issue for both houses to deal with how they'll deal with the governor and how they'll deal with each other. So for us as a labor movement, we continue to do what we do. We talk to the Assembly, we talk to the Senate, we talk to the governor, and we hope we get to a point where we can pass pro-worker legislation. But for us, it's not really an issue.
Well, when it comes to something like revenue raisers, traditionally the legislature has been the one that says, yeah, we want to do that, while the governor is not so excited. I mean, is that an area where you think that the size of the legislative majorities will make a difference, or is it still just the same dynamic?
Well, look, I think a couple of things. You know, it depends on, first of all, the governor has talked about raising revenue. So the governor said that. I think the questions now are how much, right? And as I laid out at the beginning of this conversation, what are the parameters? And let's take a comprehensive approach to it. So I think that is the first part of the question. The second part of the question is you know, are all of the new members of the Senate, are they all of the same and like mine to, in fact, raise revenue that way by raising taxes? I don't know. I hope they certainly understand where we're coming from and, as I laid out, why it's important to raise that revenue. But again, these are internal discussions that they're going to have to deal with first internally before anything even gets to the governor. And in terms of our process as a labor movement, again, everything stays the same. We make our case to both houses, to the governor, and we go from there.
We've been speaking with Mario Salento, president of New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions representing 2.5 million members, retirees, and their families, which is an influential voice at the state capitol and an underwriter of this program. Thanks so much for making the time, Mario.
David, thank you very much for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.